When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Voices of Vic podcast with me, Ben Ayton, and Katie Kirkley. And this week, with a special guest, Pete from Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, we are here to do a review of the Watford 3, Norwich City 2 match reaction. The Hornets found the way back to winning. Got back to winning ways, basically, after the 2-0 loss away to Leicester City last weekend. We're here to give a quick review of that show. But firstly, before I come to Katie, Pete, thank you very much for joining us tonight. This is your second appearance on the Voices of Vic. I think you was on a couple of seasons ago.
Yes.
When we were in the Premier League. So it's great to get you back on. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. My pleasure to be here. Yeah, like I think like most Watford fans after last night, I kind of woke up and it was like, that was good. That was good. It showed a bit of character and we were quite happy about that. So no, mate, I'm very well. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Brilliant. Also, quick mention as well, that fantastic work that Pete's doing with Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, along with Justin and Cole as well. If you're not aware of Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, you must be living under a rock. So go over to their Twitter page, check out their Twitter spaces and check out all their content. Fantastic stuff from the boys who just narrowly missed out at the FCA's the other week in Liverpool. And I also said that I'm joined by Katie as well. Katie's doing back-to-back podcasts as well. Katie, first, firstly, thank you for helping me and Mike out the other week. Me and Mike were both unavailable to do a review of the Leicester City game, so you and Joe took the reins for it, so thank you very much for that. How are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm good. It's very nice to have lots of football straight after the other. Keeps the weeks full of entertainment. And obviously, like Pete, I was very happy after the win yesterday, so had a nice day today just thinking about that.
Yeah, it's always nice after a Watford victory, isn't it? And especially after the way we did it. We'll jump straight into it. Oh, and we've got a couple of people watching already, so thank you for watching tonight. If you want to get involved in the comments section as well, we'll read out your comments during the show. Jess says hello all, and she says, oh, that's Pete from Do Not Scratch Your Eyes. Yes, it is. Your eyes are not deceiving you. It is Pete from Do Not Scratch Your Eyes. So he is here with us tonight. So get your questions in below if you want to get involved in tonight's show. But yeah, we'll start where we normally do first, and it'll be the team news for Watford. So Watford made two changes to the team that lost 2-0 away to Leicester City at the weekend. Out went Daniel Batman, obviously, after picking up two yellow cards, and he had a one-game suspension, so he came out the side. And also Tom Ince came out of the side, and in came Ismail Kone. Katie, what was your initial thoughts on the starting lineup?
I was happy. I think also Asprilla came in as well. I was happy that those changes were made. Obviously, the Backman one was pretty much like, can not do that. But yeah, I was happy to see Kone come in, and oh my God, what a game he had. I thought he was really promising at Leicester, and I literally said in the Leicester review that I really wanted to see him start because I thought that he brought a lot of energy, and that he did do. And yeah, I thought he was excellent. Same with Asprilla, I thought he was excellent as well, really driving forward. I was happy with the team.
Yeah, same with me as well. We did our predictions in our WhatsApp group before we went out, and I think I pretty much got it spot on apart from one change. I said I would have made Bio come in for Rajovic as well, because I kind of wanted a little bit more energy up top, because you know what Rajovic is going to do. He's not going to move unless it's in that 6-yard box, but that's his office, isn't it? And he does what he needs to in that area. But Pete, what did you make of that starting lineup?
I was glad to see Kone in, as we said. I thought bringing Loser in sent the wrong signal, because Kone in the previous like block of games after the previous international break had really kind of he'd stepped up and stepped up and stepped up, and he just seemed to be iteratively improving all the time. And I appreciate that somebody like Loser, he can polarize people. Because I was having a chat with John Parslow, via text during the game and at halftime. And he said, well, actually, I think he's worked hard. He shut down. He's done this. And it was like, well, I'm looking at it completely different. But that's the beauty of the game. Everybody can watch the same game, but have a different kind of opinion. I just think when you bring Kone in, he tries to drive forward with a little bit of urgency, and he tries to put those swift passes forward. And of course, yesterday was really, for me at least, was the catalyst for coming back, because that kind of game changed on a moment. So I was pleased to see him. I was pleased to see Espria. Tom Ince is an interesting one, because if you look, he got 9 goals and something like 5 assists last season. And when you're selling Yao Pedro and you're selling Saar, you've got to ask, where are the goals and the assists coming from? So that's a useful thing to have, and he's got that. But I think Espria gives us, again, almost what Katie was saying there, a different kind of energy, and you tend to kind of go up on the edge of your seat a little bit more with Espria than you do with the astute professionalism that you get from Tom Ince, in fairness to him. You know, he's no bad option to have, but I think, you know, out of a squad that has got an awful lot of impact subs, if you like, I think we're starting to see players actually go, I think I could make a difference from the start. And I think Kone can do that more than Loser. And I think Espria can do that more than Tom Ince at this moment in time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think with the difference between Tom Ince and Yasser Espria for me is Tom Ince looks like the kind of character who roll up his sleeves and put in like a workhorse performance away from home, when you need to keep like the defensive work and the high press, where you might not get that as much with Yasser Espria, but you know, you get the work and for working from Tom Ince. But home games, I think that's where Yasser Espria comes into his own, and he's more direct. And because obviously at home we have more possession, don't we? So it's more chance for Yasser Espria to get onto the ball and work his magic. So that's a massive plus. And do you see that as well, Pete? That's probably why Yasser's maybe came back in for the home game, and Tom Ince has played the away games.
Very possibly. I think in part it's about rotation and trying to keep them fit. Actually, you know, in fairness, whilst I thought Ince was personally, I thought he was quiet, but you would have that at Leicester. He still created that chance for Rajovic that went on his right and kind of went away. And he did by putting in a different kind of cross, the same kind of thing he did at Coventry for Rajovic's first goal, when he kind of actually puts it on his right. And we all know that's not his preference, but he's confident and competent enough to do that. So I think he's doing that. But I just think perhaps with Espria, he's got the crowd, you know, they'll back him at home a little bit more. And he kind of maybe feeds off of that a little bit. And they're two different kind of players, because Espria is a little bit more, he's a bit tidy, but his real moments come in moments. You know, I mean, the goal was a great example, you know, where he does something out of the ordinary, whereas Tom Ince can go for 90 minutes and just, as you say, just do the professional, solid, self-sacrificing thing. And I think, you know, last night we ended up seeing Ismail not make substitutes until really, really late, because actually he kind of had the confidence in the players who were on the pitch to try to make the difference and get across the line, which of course in the end they did, which is great.
Yeah, no, definitely. And some more comments floating through as well. Alan Leffwell, contributor to Do Not Scratch Your Eyes Twitter Spaces, evening all still buzzing about the performance and the manner of the victory last night. Also says it's also nice to be listening to Pete and not hammering it up the M1. And hello to fellow Leicester resident Katie. Mike says, Espria for me, not someone who should be playing from the start for me. Espria comes on to get bums off seats. So that's
impact sub. That's the way that a lot of these players are kind of, we're seeing them kind of disappointing at the start, but come on and raise energy. I can understand why you would use him in either way.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's probably why we've not seen Martin so much lately as well. Maybe Val's wanted to keep him as maybe a card to play off the bench to inject that little bit of pace. But that's a strange one, isn't it, Katie? Obviously, we all rate Martin's very highly, and we're maybe a little frustrated that he's not getting the game times. But do you want to see maybe more of him? And do you think that he should maybe be knocking on the door and getting into his starting 11?
I do. However, I don't know where you put him in the team. There isn't really, like, you have to drop someone for him to come in, and I don't think anyone is really unworthy of being dropped. Like, you can't really drop Sema unless there's no reason to do that. As much as I do want Martin to play, and I think when he has come on, he's given that energy. I think he does work more as an impact sub. Like, when he comes on at, like, 60 minutes, it's a lot better. Whereas, like, Ken, like we said, he's one of those, like, quite composed for 60 minutes, and then he could come off. However, I just don't see how the formation would work if you put him in, because there's no one who I would take out for him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's just got to bide his time. He'll get his opportunity again. It's just, it's difficult. I think Val's found his starting 11 now, hasn't he, really? He's, after months of trying to find that solution, I think he's definitely found that midfield three, which would work in the treat for Watford. But we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But let's dive straight into it. Let's talk about that opening 15 minutes. I know we were probably all dreading it when we all agreed to come onto this podcast yesterday, and we was like, I know I was, it was 2-0 down. And I was like, I wish we didn't agree to do that podcast tomorrow night, but what would turn it around afterwards. But let's talk about it. It took 3 minutes for Norwich to find the back of the net. And for me, Pete, I was a little bit disappointed. I felt it was self-inflicted a little bit. Jamal Lewis lost it on the halfway line. And then Norwich won the ball and they drove to the box. We put it out for a corner, and it was, you know what Watford are like lining up for set pieces this season. We looked vulnerable. Before this goal, we conceded 8 goals from set pieces this season. But a good delivery into the box, and Danny Barth rised above everyone else to make it 1-0 Norwich, and it was the 9th goal Watford have conceded, and it's the most in the Championship by any side. This zonal marking system, Pete,
yeah,
does it do your head in?
I personally hate it. The reason I hate it is because the concept of zonal, and you can have zonal and you can have man marking and you can have a hybrid of the two. The problem is that you kind of start deep to go and try and attack the ball. But of course, you're not controlling where the ball is delivered. You know, and as with this one, it's delivered into the 6-yard box. So good luck getting a run on that and actually trying to get ahead on it, because you've got literally like 4 yards to get your pace up, and they've got 100 yards to run up if they want to take it. The other issue is, as this picture actually shows really nicely, is literally at the back there. Now, you could say that Rajovic is actually, you know, kind of picking up on Barth, and he's kind of lost him, and he has, but that basically means that, you know, what happens there is you've got Andrews effectively with three there at the back. We always cluster underneath the near post, and if they put a ball to the far post, and this also happens to us in open play, in fairness, but especially with this zonal marking, if players move into somebody else's zone, it allows a player to go, well, that's not my zone. If you're man marking, you go, that's my man, and it makes the accountability, and you know, you don't want it to be a blame situation, but this is results orientated football. That's the honest truth of it. It's you lost your man, or you didn't pick up that. Whereas this is kind of, oh, well, he moved from my zone into that zone. Well, the zones aren't marked. You know, it's not precise. And at the end of the day, what you need to have is somebody who is physically dominant in that particular area, you know, to be able to kind of try to dominate it. In the 90s, we went and signed a lad called Colin Foster, who was about 6'8" or something ridiculous. And he was just one of those players that the ball would come onto his head, almost gravitationally pulled. If you've got somebody like that, that's brilliant. In this instance, look who we've got already underneath the ball. You've got Porteous, who's kind of dominant. Hoot's actually not even in the picture. He's so far in the near post. We've got to get a balance right there. And what you've got to try to do is allocate, if you are going to do man marking, you've got to make sure that you're putting the size, the right size, up against them. If you remember the other week, I think it was against Millwall, when they got the corner goal, and it was Loser was trying to stop the other centre-back. I can't remember what his name was, but he was basically a unit, and Loser was trying to stop him for all he was worth. So you've got to make sure that you're giving allocation to free, you know, at free kicks and set pieces, and mark, you know, kind of bringing people together who need to be the right person against the right opponent. Otherwise, it all goes imbalanced, and that's what we've seen this season. I thought, though, we'd gone and got a former Tottenham set piece coach who'd come in a few weeks ago and was going to be looking at this. So so far, not much improvement.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as well. I heard something about a new set piece coach potentially coming in from Spurs, but yeah. I never heard any official word on it, and it kind of went quiet afterwards. I don't know where it was first reported, but it's, I agree, Pete, it's a bit of a mismatch, isn't it? Like, Pete, there's players in zones, but surely if you see like a really tall player standing in the zone where Andrews is, for example, you'd be like, right, okay, who, we need you to go back into that area because it's a mismatch. It just seems like there's no common sense when it comes to set pieces for Watford.
Like a lot of things, it's still unfamiliar to a lot of players to get it done, and it needs a lot of drilling in, and especially if it is this kind of hybrid thing. Because if you think about it, if you're going to take all of your bigger players and your better headers and you're going to put them on the line and they're going to run out 6 yards and then try and jump against people who are moving as quickly as they can with kind of pre-prescribed areas as to where the ball's going to go, pre-prescribed patterns that you have to react to, you don't have that advantage. If you are man marking, then what you are doing, it's just the old thing about, you know, the ball might go or you might go, but both won't, and you'll kind of be able to block the run and make some kind of, even if you don't win it. When I was coaching, my old phrase was, you know, even if you don't win it 100%, if you stop the opposition getting on it 100%, you've done your job. So you don't have to necessarily win the header, but providing your body shape and your body position and your strength with him is stopping him winning at 100%. It can make a huge difference to the quality of the header that they can get in. And that happens all over the pitch.
Definitely. And Adam Lafwell says, I'll never accept zonal marking. Space never scored a goal. Players do. Yeah. I couldn't have said it any better. And Katie, with all this talk on zonal marking and the news of Watford being conceding the most goals from set pieces now in the league, are you looking for a change of style now, like a change from Valerie Ishmael to go maybe man marking for the games coming ahead now? Because surely we can't stick at something where we're leaking goals in.
Yeah, I think I've never been a fan of zonal marking anyway. I think it doesn't really work. And I think that we would have to kind of look at this and go, actually, we are conceding so many goals from set pieces, and it is just about, oh, there's like three players who are just open goal, like no one's looking at them. And that is where we really seem to struggle. So I would hope that after this weekend, yesterday, you would still come out of that and be like, okay, what can we work on? Even though we won, where were the issues? And it was in the set pieces and this zonal marking that isn't really working.
Yeah, well, it didn't get any better for Watford. Roll on 9 minutes. And Norwich had a second goal. I'm probably going to butcher his name. Is it Juan Hu Joe? Looking at this picture, it looked like he had the freedom of Vicarage Road. And watching it, when he pulled his right foot back to hit this ball, I was thinking, what on earth are you attempting this shot from the distance here? But obviously, he knew better than me. Again, Pete, I think it's another avoidable goal from Watford. Ryan Porteous plays a really loose ball into midfield, trying to find Jake Livermore. It was waywards. And then Norwich quickly spun it to Juan, and then he just released this fierce shot from 35 yards, and it kind of went straight at Ben Hamer, but I don't know whether the ball moved and that's unsighted him and that's why it beat him. But where do you put maybe the blame down for this goal for Watford?
Well, I mean, obviously we're all happy and pleased that the game finished as it was, but I think everybody at 20 past eight yesterday was going, you know, kind of hanging their head. And as you said earlier on, oh my God, we've got a podcast today. On the Twitter spaces, on the phone in that we did afterwards, Terry came on and said that his son had described it as a knuckleball. And it's the kind of, it's almost where you hit the ball on the air valve. You know, it's an old set piece kind of thing where, because you're hitting it, the flight of the ball may be kind of a little bit inconsistent, or at least it flew that way. Because I'm sitting in the family stand, so I'm down the far end from it, but it certainly looked to be moving, you know, in the flight of the ball as it was going. I think Hamer, undoubtedly he should have done better, because it was so far out. He had an opportunity to do so, but every goalkeeper, when they make a mistake, it's going to cost you a goal, and therefore you're going to note it. It's almost a little bit like zonal marking. When you concede a goal, we all talk about zonal marking, but we don't kind of count the ones that are man marking. If a defender pulls a Rick and it leads to a goal, yeah, okay, we'll think about it. But when the goalkeeper does it, it's so blindingly obvious. And this one, I think he could have done better, but I think he got some movement on the ball, and it may well have involved the actual kind of. The valve needle kind of being struck pretty pure. It was a great strike from the lad, and he was causing us no end of problems because he was pacey. And when he went off, that helped a great deal indeed.
Yeah, no, definitely did. He actually injured himself off the back of that strike as well. He ended up going off minutes later, didn't he? Which probably played into Watford's hands a little bit, because he did look like a handful player when he was on the pitch. But Katie, what were you thinking at 8:20 last night when it was 2-0, it was probably the worst Watford opening performance I've seen for, well, it's been bad for about 2-3 seasons, but it's up there with those performances 2-3 seasons ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was ready to turn it off. Like, I was like, oh, I'll give it a few more minutes and I'll turn this off, because the Bake Off final was on as well. So I was watching the Bake Off final. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to watch Bake Off. I'm not watching this. Like, we're rubbish. And then I was like, I'll give it like 10 more minutes, or I'll watch till halftime and then I'll turn it off. And then obviously when we went and scored, I was like, okay, I'll carry on. But yeah, I was very disappointed with the performance and with just scoring scoring so early on. And especially because the goals were just disappointing from the team. Like, the first goal was some of the worst defending I've ever seen. Again, yeah. Like Pete said, that Hamer really should have done better for that goal. I think, you know, it didn't, obviously, yeah, it's a tough one to save, but I really didn't look like he probably could have got a little bit more just to tip it over. It kind of only went in just, and I just thought, you know, he had a lot of time. But yeah, I was not happy at 20 minutes. I was texting my dad and he was trying to get the Sky Sports app to work or something, and he was like, oh, I can't even get it to work. I was like, don't bother.
I mean, it was at that point, we were the general passing, which, as you said, kind of in the build-up to that, we were giving it away left, right and centre. And there came a couple of moments which were, I mean, obviously the goal is a catalyst, you know, the Kone goal, which we'll get onto. But there were a couple of moments, and one of them was KMB had the ball and he tried to pass it and missed his player by about 15 yards. And it was the first time, bearing in mind we were 2-0 down, when the crowd reacted and kind of went, no, come on, this is really, really isn't good enough. This isn't professional enough. And that was a catalyst in the negative. And then there was a crunching tackle from Jake Livermore. And it was like, it was kind of a little bit like, occasionally Deeney would do these and get sent off, if you remember, if anybody remembers Swansea once, I think it was, or Huddersfield, one of the two. Yeah. You know, but it's one of those, no, we're not just going to take this line down. We're going to kind of fight back. And then it sort of turned. And suddenly the passing, I'm not saying it was perfect by any means. We were still kind of, you know, who especially was having a difficult passing game, it seemed like yesterday. Mm-hmm. But suddenly things started to click. But for that first, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 minutes, it was as bad as we have seen for a very, very long time. But, you know, those moments, though, those crunching tackles, or, you know, even a reaction to go, no, this isn't good enough, Edo. You know, you can do better than that. If we see some character from the players actually reacting, as we end up doing, well, that's no bad thing.
Yeah, we struggled to get onto the ball. We couldn't put two, three passes together. And then I've just had a look. It was 18 minutes when Jake Livermore picked up that yellow card. But that was the switch then, wasn't it? That was when, okay, boys, enough's enough. We're getting bullied here. Let's just put something on them a little bit and show the fans that we're up for a fight. And Jake Livermore pulled up his sleeves. And then it was 29 minutes on the clock and Watford actually had their first shot on target. It was Lewis had an effort from outside the box. And the goalkeeper long parried it, and Kone was quick to follow it up, but unfortunate for him, his rebound was saved by the keeper. But it didn't take too much longer for Kone to get his first goal for Watford. In fact, it was a couple of minutes. And Pete, I've spoken about Kone a few times on the podcast, and I feel like his performances of late have been getting better and better, and I'm pulling it down to all the consistency of playing week in, week out now. We all know that he missed the Huddersfield game due to lateness, and he'll be kicking himself about, because he really got into the team and was showing his showing Imran Lusa how to actually do like a full performance. But yesterday again, Kone was outstanding, wasn't he, Pete? And he took his goal so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we forget, this is a young man, who switched continents. He's still only about 18 months into his professional career. And having worked with kind of development areas and younger players, sometimes the last thing you end up seeing is consistency, because you'll see it in fits and starts, but trying to keep it against different opposition and repeating it day in, day out is difficult. But he's absolutely what you said there. He's just stepping and stepping and stepping. And we saw such an improvement through that last block between the international breaks there that it was really something. I know that from, you can call it a rumour, but I heard it from somebody very much in the know that when Chris Wilder came in, he basically kind of said, look, you're going to figure strongly. You're going to really be there. And the next day he didn't turn up because he basically was, up till too late and kind of, not partying or anything, just playing games, and didn't make it in. And that speaks to the culture that has been there. And he's done it again this season. But this time we've got a manager who is at least being invested in by the club, i.e. at least being kept on. And he looks like exactly that he is turning it around and doing it on the pitch, because that's where it matters. If you do it on the grass, in many ways, it doesn't really matter what you do elsewhere, because people will keep you there. The problem is we've had people who've been misbehaving and not performing on the grass, and that just is not compatible with each other. Now, I think we're really starting to see something with him. We're starting to see him burst in front of, seasoned championship midfield players and start to get a grip on games. And I appreciate there's the goal there. That's the catalyst, but he's done it in other games as well when he's come on as a sub before and he's got the ball and his forward passing is really something. And I think we see the best of Kone when we have Ken Semmer on the pitch. And the reason being is that Martins is right-footed and is always looking to cut inside. And the other side, you've got left-footed Tom Ince or left-footed Despria. They're looking to cut inside. A lot of the time when he picks up the ball, especially from the left side, he does that little reverse ball out to a wide player, i.e. Ken or in this case also Lewis yesterday, overlapping. If we're constantly cutting inside, we reduce his passing options and his range. And if you think about last night, how many times he was, especially, but putting little diagonal balls into the byline for those two guys especially to run onto and then to feed the ball in with an outswinging cross, which is what Rajovic needs in order to thrive and survive. I think for me, his improvement makes it harder for Martins to get back in the side.
Yeah, no, I agree. And with his improvements as well, it's obviously keeping Imran Lusa on the bench as well. He's and Tom Deli as well. Remember, start of the season, Tom Deli, that was his spot. And I think one of the games you've just kind of mentioned a little bit, it was Tom Deli was playing the first half, Kone came on second half, and he just injected that bit of pace and creativity and vision. And it was just like, okay, he's quick, he's moving the ball quicker than Tom Deli. And I just love the vision that he's got as well. I put him in the same category as Yasser Espria, where I think they could pass a ball through the slightest angle which no one else in a Watford shirt can find. I just think he's so gifted, Kone, and we're seeing the improvement from him now. And talking about consistency as well, the spats about goals for Kone now, he scored for Canada on the weekend against Jamaica. He's now scored for Watford. He almost got a second goal as well, hitting the crossbar. That was so unlucky. So he's finding that consistency now, and now it's just improving, isn't it? And I know, Katie, but he's obviously very young, and we need to keep a level head with Ismaël Koné, not to put too much pressure on him. But it's in the signs we're seeing from him, it's encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, I sung very high praise of him on Saturday against Leicester, and I said that when he came on, it was almost like we had this energy in midfield, and I was like saying how I wish that if we had not been a goal down, it might have been a different story in the end. And then in the first, like, 20 minutes yesterday, I put out a tweet saying, like, is Koné ever going to be able to keep the ball or something? Like, how he was not doing well. He just kept losing the ball every time he got it. And then it was like you said, after that, like, 20, 30 minutes, it was like a different player. You know, he was always driving forward, always looking for that forward pass. He's so quick in that midfield where, like, Tom Ince isn't always and stuff. I think he honestly, like, he has really stepped up. And I think it just shows what Val is doing, because I look at this team and I think, we actually have good players, but these are players that people would have said at the start of the season, they're rubbish. They're rubbish. They can't prove themselves. Every single player has proved themselves in the last month or two. I feel like we're really seeing each player at their best. And I feel like that all comes down to how Val is treating them and the way that he's got rid of all the old bad habits that they had before. And we're really seeing that on the pitch. I think we are really seeing a changed side, but it's actually really refreshing, because I think Koné, like, he's really stepped up. I think he could go all the way. I think he's one of the best midfielders we've had in a long time.
Yeah, the last couple of performances, I've been looking at him, I'm like, he's up there with one of the most talented players we've got in the squad, potential wise. He's up there with Yasser Asprilla for me. But we'll talk about the second goal now. And I want to talk about, just following on a little bit from what Katie's talking about there, Pete, and it's the character and mindset and the change of attitude for Watford players we're seeing this season compared to last season. Because last season, if we were 2-0 down after 15 minutes, well, good example. We weren't 2-0 down. Good example was the Cardiff home game last season. We took the lead, took our foot off the gas. Cardiff scored quick goals in quick succession, and then it went downhill from there. This season, we've seen that change of attitude now. Is that what's in? Are you impressed with the change of attitude? And is that all down to Valerie Ismaël and the discipline maybe he's setting with the club?
It's always difficult because goals change games fundamentally. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason, because it's true. So that goal from Koné brings us back in. And what you saw was a team, because up until the start of the game yesterday, Norwich had scored 30, but they conceded 32. And we conceded about 20 something like in that kind of number, you know, considerably more over the small number of games we played. And therefore, you suddenly saw a bit of a chink in their confidence. But you suddenly saw us go, we've all seen games, you know, go like a swingometer, you know, in terms of confidence and, you know, a dreadful half one, you know, after 45 minutes, you know, second half comes and it goes another way. That's been part of it. But I do like the fact that, you know, they could have gone two ways here. And as you absolutely say, and a lot of people came on the spaces last night and said, this time last year, that lot last year would have just basically gone, oh, well, that's gone. That's gone, and it's not coming back, is it? And I don't mean to just talk about money, but what we've got here is a far less expensively assembled or less assembled kind of expensive wage bill, and they're actually turning it round. I think what we've also done is bring the average age down. You're now looking at players who've got something to try to play for, because, you know, Rajovic, for all the fact that he doesn't do very much outside the penalty box, where it counts, he's really making it count, and he'll want to go on to score goals and move on and get at a higher level. There's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, that's where they've got to see it, and they have to take confidence from that moment of turning it around. And as I say, there was the moment where Livermore went in, you know, an old head, you know, somebody who we were debating about, you know, the captain's armband, obviously, after the stuff in the Watford Observer. Does he warrant it, the armband? Probably. Does he need it? Probably not, because he's already doing that role in the midfield. Yeah. There was a wonderful moment, which I picked out, where Ashley Barnes, who is, you know, crikey, Hogwarts master of the dark arts, if ever there was one, bounced off of him, which was a beautiful thing to see. And he seemed to actually have, in the middle of the park, almost like an element of confidence, almost radiating from him. Him and Kone, Kayembe sorted himself out and had a much better second half, and then it sort of moved forward. Fundamentally, it comes down to paying attention, being turned on, and doing the basics right from the very, very start. If you can get that going, then you're going to get a foothold in the game. But what this young man here does is he gives us a chance if we can put a decent delivery into the box. And this is, again, why it's going to be harder for young Martins to get back in, because, again, you've got to deliver a ball that is out swinging from the goalkeeper rather than swinging into him, which Martins is going to do. Martins isn't going to get to the byline and then use his left. In this particular instance, it was Semmer and it was Lewis, and it's an outswinging goal, cross. And we've seen how effective he can be in just getting there, just in front of the centre back. So with that, that's why Martins is going to find it very hard, or he has to go and switch wing and look for an opportunity to kind of go, right, I'm going to try and be an orthodox winger as well. So a great level of change in confidence or determination when they were down. I think, as I say, that ball out from Ede Kayembe and everybody going, no, this is no good, boo. They needed that. They needed that rocket at that moment. And the team from last season would have wilted and just gone, oh, it's another one, and I'm not connected to this, and I'm going to be going back on loan something, you know, to my parent club or what have you. This lot didn't. Fair play to them.
Yeah, no, it does look like we've got a bunch of players that actually care now, and obviously they care for themselves and they care about the football club. Like you've just mentioned, Rajovic is probably here. He wants to do well for a club, but he also wants to try and get himself like to the biggest stage possible in his footballing career. And that's what we want. We want hungry players, and to be able to play to his strengths now as well by playing those outswinging balls into the box, like coming from the left-hand side from Lewis and Semmer, instead of cutting in on the right foot and swinging it in. So he can't attack the ball that way, but with an outswinging ball, he can attack it. And he showed yesterday, and he's so deadly in that six-yard box, isn't it, Katie? And I know he rubs up fans the wrong way, because maybe we want to see a bit more from our centre forward, maybe be a bit more physical, bully the central defenders, link up play, press the goalkeeper maybe a little bit more. But at the end of the day, he's the number nine striker and he's got 7 goals this season and he costs 1.3 million. He's not doing too bad, is he?
No, every game I literally say, like, he's so bad, he's so bad. After the Leicester game, I was again saying, like, he was so disappointing. Like, he shouldn't play. I thought that Bayo should have started, because I was thinking, oh my God, like, if he played like Leicester, he's awful. But it's so weird. I think there was a stat or something where it was like he had more goals than like completed passes or something in one game or something. I was literally like, he's such a funny player. Like, I can't believe he literally can do nothing, but he still scores. But fair enough. Like, if you're going to score a goal, you can be in the team. Like, you don't have to do anything else. And that's what he does do. And out of all the chances that come in, all it takes is just one, and he will get on the end of it. And we've seen that happen so many times. And he doesn't really do a lot, he is quite key to this team. And we've seen it when it works, and it does work. Him and Ken, that link up, it's really something special.
No, it really is. And I'm starting to like him more, because I know what he brings to this team. We just need to play to his strengths. But he seems like a great guy off the pitch as well. There's been a couple of interviews with Watford on YouTube lately as well, and he did an interview last week, and he comes across really well, and he's got like a really good like smile on his face as well. Like he's really happy to be here, because obviously he was playing like the third tier in Sweden a couple of seasons ago. So to be playing in the Championship, like one of the biggest leagues in the world, it's a big step up for him, and he's from a new country, and he's going to take time to adapt. And if he's still adapting, he's got 7 goals, then I can't wait for him to be fully adapted. But I did think that was probably a better performance I've seen from Rajovic. I did see him to get a little bit more involved yesterday. He was getting involved in the link-up play. He was actually hustling the defenders to win balls in the air. And yeah, I must say, credit where credit's due. He did impress me yesterday. But Watford went in half-time, 2-2. Much better 45 minutes in the end for Watford. Ended the half strongly. If anything, I don't think Watford wanted the half-time whistle to come because we was on the up. We had the momentum. And Norwich were on the back foot. I think they really struggled to get any kind of possession, really, after that, Pete. We kind of knocked the wind out of them at half-time, didn't we?
Well, again, another observation was the fact that how quickly, in terms of tempo, Norwich started the game. I can't remember who brought it up, but it was an absolute valid point. Was I think it was Brett, actually, who came in and said, you know, they started so fast and we couldn't kind of match them. And therefore, a lot of that passing going awry was the fact that they were under pressure, you know, almost constantly. But Norwich couldn't keep it up. And they kind of slowly blew themselves out over the half. And then, of course, you get that first goal back. And as I say, you then saw that tilt in terms of both confidence and in terms of, you know, kind of the number of passes that were going on. Because by the end of the game, I think we'd had close to kind of three times more passes than they had, because we'd had the ball and we're knocking it and keeping it. And of course, you get knackered when you're running without the ball far more than if you're in possession and you're looking to create, because just mentally it's very fatiguing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the message at halftime, Katie, from Valerie was probably just to carry on testing the Norwich back line and goalkeeper and to continue the shots, because that's what I noticed yesterday as well. Watford were taking a lot of shots, and I think they had 21 shots in total in that game. But second half, they came out and they carried on from where they left off. It was Andrews had a deflected cross that almost went in, and I was listening to your Twitter spaces, Pete, and for that, you just want a Watford shirt to follow that up, really. It was a bit static, wasn't it? I don't think they was expecting the cross to maybe be deflected and the keeper to parry it like that. But
The old adage was, because you used to be striking in partners, you know, Ross Jenkins and Luther Blissett be the obvious ones that everybody remember. But, you know, a whole host that would be working in partnership, and if one was shooting, the other one would be positioning himself to see if a spill was happening. Now we're playing this 4-3-3. You've got a solitary striker. He's having to play with his back to goal a lot. In Rajovic's case, he's not that confident or indeed competent at doing that yet. We hope he improves, but it's rather hard to basically be following in from absolutely everywhere and be the only person who's doing that. So I can kind of understand it, but it's a basic tenet. If the goalkeeper's gonna spill it, do what we have not done all season, all over the pitch very well. Win the second ball. It's spilling off the goalkeeper. It's still a second ball. First to it, you've got a chance to win the prize, and we didn't in the first one. And of course, you know, that's actually where the winning goal actually came from. An amazing amount of goals, or rather shots being attempted, which is really pleasing to see. And if you are going to try that, you know, then somebody has to be following up, and then, you know, the number eights or the far-sided winger has to be prepared to kind of make that work. Unfortunately for us, somebody did.
Yeah, no, definitely. Katie, it got to 60 minutes and there was no substitution from Val. It's normally trademark, isn't it? It's normally a double substitution or triple substitution where he tries to maybe inject a bit of pace or just change it up a little bit. But we didn't see that yesterday. Did that take you by surprise?
Yeah, I was thinking, well, the second half, I thought we were a lot more like doing a lot better. And I wasn't worried that, like, you know, Norwich didn't see a lot of the ball. But I was thinking, It's getting late in the game. Like, we need to make a sub now, because all it might take is like one mistake that comes from, I don't know, players being tired, and that will slip up. And I was just thinking, we're still on the front foot. I wasn't worried, but I wasn't thinking we're going to score like this, because I knew it was coming, but I thought maybe we need fresh legs to help bring that on. So I was a bit concerned when there was no substitution made till like, I'm not sure, if I think it was like the 80th minute or something. So I was a bit like worried, but you know, we did well in the end. But it was different because he had changed up from what he has done like every single game. So I was like, it's weird when he does something different.
Yeah, he gave faith to the players on the pitch, didn't he? He stuck to the game plan, and he knew what he wanted from him, and he knew if I kept on knocking on that door, I was going to find the back of the net. Mike Duffy says, Lou Orns made a good observation pre-match saying that George Long didn't cope with shots low down to his side. Kone proved just that. Test the keeper. And he certainly did in that first half. And it was Watford found the back of the net, and it was in the... When was it? It was... Can't even find the minute of the game now. It was 77 minutes. Yesterday, Spria, great feat, Pete, wasn't it, to find the back of the net? And I joke with my six-a-side football team because I do a bit of a ball run whenever I'm one-on-one with a goalkeeper. But it's six-a-side. You can mess around and try bits and pieces like that, but I wouldn't have the balls to try that in a stadium full of people. But fair play from Yesterday, Spria. Like, anyone else, if that falls to, they'll just have a shot on target to try and beat the keeper. But to have the balls to take it round the keeper and find the back of the net is just sublime. How impressed was you with Yasser's technique there and the ability to do what he did?
In and of that moment, I mean, it was exceptional. It was excellent. But I think, you know, kind of almost reversing back a little bit, you know, Hoot taking that shot. And again, yeah, it comes back to what Luke has said there, which is he struggled. He kind of spilt it again, and it spilled out. He got onto it, had the calmness and the reassurance. And it's where we come back to players like Asprilla or like Saar being players of moments. You're not necessarily going to see them involved 90 minutes of the game doing the hard work. But at the cutting edge, that's where they might actually kind of show the difference. And bearing in mind that, you know, the game... You know, had that moment not happened, we would be having a very different discussion. And you look at the passing and the stats and the possession, and you go, no, that win was warranted. It absolutely was deserved, and it was. But you still need somebody to be able to buy a ticket and win the raffle. And, you know, the lad did that. And at such a young age, again, I keep coming back to going, oh, wow, they're in a foreign country. I mean, a lot of the, you know, footballers are. But for him to do that at his age, show that kind of calm assurance. He's always had the technique. We've seen that there. But he's also starting to do a little. He seems to have gone on the Yasser Asprilla diet a little bit. On the Yao Pedro diet a bit. He just seems to be getting a core level of strength now. He's kind of maybe developing into a slightly more of a man's body rather than, you know, he was incredibly young and slight. But 2 years in the Championship will toughen you up, and it looks like it might be starting to do him some good. And he's coming out the other end. But no, what a talent. We'll just see one, how long we keep him, and secondly, exactly how much he can do along the way. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see in his photo here, you can see that he looks like he's bulked up a tiny bit, hasn't he? Oh. So he has gone on that Joao Pedro diet. He's not looking like actually young on his debut for Watford, where the shirt wouldn't fit him. So yeah, you can definitely see that. And it's great to see the rewards for Yasser as well, Katie. That was his third goal of the season for Watford as well. So he is contributing it with goals now. But this is what we're seeing again from youngsters getting consistency of playing regularly. And we're seeing the rewards with Yasser, aren't we?
Honestly, like, you can't hate him. Like, he's just so cute. Like, honestly, I just love him. Like, I literally just love him. And I feel like it is so rewarding what he does on the pitch. And every time I watch the highlights back and the goal, it actually just looks better and better every time because it's so quick. The thinking that he does with it, he is so quick, and it's just like, he's just a little dancer. The way he does it, and the way, like, you can even see in the picture, Porteous is literally screaming for the ball, but he doesn't, you know. And if he had missed, okay, different story, but he doesn't. And I think it is such a good goal. He's so composed, and yeah, it is again showing how much talent he has. And in the last few games, we've seen how much talent he has. He is, yeah, he's great. And I hope that we are able to keep him.
Yeah, there might be a few Premier League sides watching in the wings, keeping their tabs on him. And look, we know Watford's a selling club, don't we, Pete? We know we're not going to keep on the Yasser Asprilla for the rest of his career. Obviously, there's going to be bigger sides looking at him, but it's a message just to enjoy him whilst you've got him, and just enjoy him.
Well, I think you have to. And I've called him the Poundland Foden before, because he operates in a similar kind of area. He's got similar capabilities, not quite at the same level. I'm not saying that at all, but we haven't paid what you'd have to pay for Phil Foden. But he does the same role. He can do it, and he can do it. He probably can do that at the Premier League level at some stage in the very near future, I would suggest. Now, yeah, we are a selling club. You know, nobody in Colombia ever, you know, kind of grew up dreaming of playing at Vicarage Road. It would have been where, who, what, how. But because of, you know, whatever people think of the Pozzo, some of the players that we've seen gracing Vicarage Road over the last 11 years, and I'm not a complete fan of the Pozzos, by the way, here at all, but has been quite sublime and something that we would have never have seen before. And it's, you know, even now when we are, you know, toughing it out, shall we say, with a reduced budget, to still have an Asprilla coming in, to still see actually a Kone coming in and developing. Yes, we're buying them younger. Yes, we're buying them less expensively. And yes, it might take them longer to make an impact than a Richarlison, for example. But look at Yao Pedro. You buy him, you bring him in and kind of develop him and give him enough game time to be able to improve. Hopefully, we could give Asprilla better coaching than we gave Yao Pedro, because he had 101 different managers, then they will go on to sell and move and help develop, hopefully, the next tranche of players that we bring in. And yes, okay, we are a conveyor belt of sorts, but there's been lots of clubs like that. Ajax are a selling club. You know, they do exactly the same thing. They go and bring in young players. They develop through their academy and through bringing players in now from abroad. They used to just restrict it to an 80 kilometer area around Amsterdam, which was just ludicrous. And they still produced world beaters. And then when they went on, the next lot bought in, because you have to realize that there's a commercial imperative as well. I think we can have our cake and literally eat it in this instance. And, you know, seeing some of these players coming on and going through, you know, it happened before the Pozzos. Ashley Young, everybody, you know, I mean, he's got sold to basically keep the club moving, you know, kind of, or to keep the club living at one stage. And the more of those we have, the better. We can just enjoy them while they're here, and hopefully more of this lad, and hope he gets better, and that we get the, and we decide to sell at the right time, rather than we did with people like Saar and Doucouré, where we stopped kind of rolling them over and bringing in yet more kind of fresh faces. I think you can do both, and you can do it both to bring, you know, the club up, you know, into the Premiership. We've done it before, and then hopefully everything kind of just improves again iteratively. But it's going to be a long time to see that, and we're going to have to see what happens with our owners. So there we go. But yeah, Asprilla, good young lad.
Yeah, hopefully we see some more great moments from Jesper for the rest of the season. I'm sure we will. He's so talented, and we've seen great moments from him this season already. But Katie, it finished Watford 3, Norwich City 2. Watford won for the first time from coming from 2-0 down in the league since September 2016. That was West Ham 2, Watford 4. Obviously, people have pointed out that Watford actually did turn around a 2-0 a 2-0 result before, and it was in the FA Cup semi-final to Wolves when we went on to win 3-2. I know a lot of people was getting back to our tweet last night saying, have you forgot about the Wolves game? No, we didn't forget. We just forgot to put league game in the tweet. So thanks for pointing that out, everyone. But yeah, Katie, sum up that performance. It was a whirlwind game, wasn't it, really? It was a mixture of emotions. It was a typical game for a Watford fan, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was, I would say, a game of two halves, but it wasn't really. It was a game of like 20 minutes and like 70 minutes. I think, yeah, the first half, I was thinking, oh God, like this, you're going straight off, bake off, you got my full attention now, like I'm not watching this. But, you know, the passion and the way that they conducted themselves after that, going 2-0 down, never in a million years would I have thought we have won that game 3-2. Even with how we are now, I still didn't think that we would win that. And it was the fact that even when we got to 2-2, I was watching Valerian Ismail's Sky Sports interview afterwards, and they asked him what he said at halftime, and he just said that he kept telling them that he was so proud of them. And I was literally like, oh, and he just kept saying how he was so proud and how they've done one half of the job, they've got to just complete the job. And the fact that they then even went on to win the game, and the second half we looked so comfortable as well. I was literally like, this is like the revolution. This is crazy. I was like, never ever would I think that this would happen, even with this squad. But I think I've really, not that I wasn't involved in the squad, but now I'm really like, wow, if they can do this, well, we can do anything.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back to that West Ham game, we're talking about catalysts in this game. You go back to the Wolves game, obviously that goal from Jerry Deulofeu was just a ridiculous moment, and suddenly the game pivoted. West Ham was a little bit more like last night with that moment with Jake Livermore, with the, you know, kind of, no, you're not going to do this, where Deeney rolled up his sleeves and went, no, this is not good enough. We've got to go in and, you know, kind of show what this means. So it was good to see this younger, less expensive squad show that kind of character. The challenge is for them now to do that as often as they can. They're going to fall over. They're young. They will make mistakes. You know, they're not perfect by any means. And we will see opposition such as, you know, Leicester obviously last week, but also, you know, kind of Southampton and Ipswich who are going to kind of challenge us. But if they can slowly do what the players we've been discussing, you know, today have done, and slowly iteratively improve over time, if they can also do that as a team, that really takes us somewhere. I was talking to the Sunderland and a Middlesbrough podcast that we kind of do the opposition view with, and one of the questions I asked them was, how do you think you'll feel with your team if it stayed as it was, but in 2 years' time, where would it be? And they were like, yeah, no, we can really see how they're developing and what they're doing. That's very easy to do that when you're at the right end of the league table, as Sunderland were. But for the first time last night, I thought, actually, this is starting to build. And maybe the Leicester game was the blip. Maybe. Because we've gone six games unbeaten. Leicester was always going to be a tough trip. But we've actually reacted to not only the Leicester defeat, but also the adversity in yesterday's game. And they showed a bit of maturity. They showed a bit of, you know, a belligerence. No, you're not going to do this to us. They stood up to it. They didn't get bullied. And they turned it around. Yes, it was against Norwich, who are in a bit of a trough. So that means that their next challenge is to go and do it against as well as they can in performances against those other teams.
Yeah, it seems with this team, I'm with you as well. I feel there's a lot more belief with this team now, and it's nice to see a team put it in 110%. But with this team as well, I feel like there's a foundation there now. We've got key players in key areas of the pitch, and it just seems like it just needs tweaking a little bit, maybe in January, just adding players to this. Now Bell's obviously got his system, but it's just improving the team. But I don't think it would need too much work to it, and also the team spirit as well. It's not the first time Watford came from behind to get points this season. We did it away to Cardiff. It was 1-0 down, came away with a 1-1 draw. Okay, we know we all should have won that with Bios missing the first half, but they still came back to rescue a point. We did it with West Brom at home. We was 2-1 down at home, came back 2-2. And then last night as well was another great example, coming down from 2-0 to 3-2. So we've got that spirit and character. And I think it's got more fans on board, hasn't it, Katie, after seeing last night's performance, like seeing how Watford turned it around?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely made me feel, I mean, I felt overall, especially in the last few games, I felt strong about this side and happy and on board with this. And I do agree that in January there could be some tweaking, not too much though, because I feel like there is this dynamic and you don't want to just add people in for the sake of adding them. It is this, it works right now, and you don't want to add people who are gonna, you know, rock the boat a bit, even if they have got, I don't know, better experience. You don't want to bring people in who have a bad attitude. Because I think that's where it all kind of lies to, because we've really struggled for the last few seasons. And I think it has come down to the attitude of the players. And only now we're really seeing the side where the players want to play for the club. They want to be there for the fans. They want to get the results. They want to prove everyone wrong. And I think that is what gets everyone behind. I remember saying at the end of last season how all I want to see is a team that tries, a team that cares, a team that wants to wear on the shirt and be proud. And that is what I'm seeing, and we're seeing week in, week out. It isn't, oh, the fluke performance here and there. It's consistent. We are finally being consistent. Okay, yeah, the Leicester, whatever. It's fine. It was Leicester. I think going forward, we've got some tough games. Hull is not going to be easy on Saturday, but if we can just keep going how we're doing, I don't really see how there's, why there's going to be any issues.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you've mentioned it there, Hull City this weekend, Watford travel to Humberside this weekend, 3 o'clock kickoff at Hull. Watford obviously back to winning ways after the 2-0 defeat at Leicester. So it's a great reaction from the Hornets. But can they keep that going at Hull this weekend, Pete? It's going to be a difficult game. Liam Rossini's got a really good tune out of him. He's recruited really well this summer as well. I like his recruitment. I think Philogene's absolutely top class, and he shunned for a poor Cardiff City side last season. You could see the talent in him. He's an England under 21 international. He scored and assisted pretty much every other game this season, if not every game. What are you expecting from this game this weekend?
Well, again, we had a chat with a friend of ours at Hull for the opposition view, and they are, again, they're another club who they are so very pleased the way that they are developing. You know, and you know, over the many seasons that they'd had under the Alam family, where it wasn't happy. You know, it's lovely to see a team coming out the other side, and he's kind of. Comments and observations were that they've got a frightening pace. They are very good on the counter attack, I should say, but they're also very, very good in possession. And they've got players who, for example, Scott Twine was a player that a lot of people quite like the look of. He's not really getting much there. You know, Tufan has done well there, but he's coming back from an injury. But they are creating an awful lot of chances. The thing that they are missing more than anything, they had a lad called Estupiñán last year, and he's gone on loan to Metz. We found out that basically they said 2 million loan fee for the year, and they went, really? Oh, yeah, okay, go on. So they brought in Liam Delap. They brought in Philogene as well, which was a 5 million purchase with a 15 million buyback option from Villa, which only kicks in if Hull get into the same division as Villa, or Villa come down. They have basically kind of first refusal, but it can also go into a bidding war for him as well. So they can, you know, we'll sell him back to you for 15 million if they want to have him. But if somebody offers 25 million, Villa have got to have it. So it's a really good use of this kind of buyback clause, because it works really well in Hull's favour, and it's got to go, you know, something's got to go extremely squirrely for it to go wrong. So, you know, a 5 million, we know what we were spending last in the last window, and it was nothing like that kind of number. You know, the honest truth of the thing, I'm sure we won't find out for a little while. We only found out about Ben Manga's spending the 3 million on Ferreira, so we didn't end up with last January, we didn't end up with Livermore, and we didn't end up with Jed Spence, and we didn't end up with another two Premier League loanees who were supposed to come in. How much of that, I think, is the narrative of the club, and how much is true? Well, you can be your own judge on that. But it shows that January isn't going to be easy. I would hope that anything that they do bring in, it has to be somebody who is going to step in and be, this sounds an obvious thing, they have to be considerably better than what we have in there at the moment. There is no point bringing in people who are going to be squad players, because we've got the squad players there, are all much of a muchness. What we need is somebody who can turn out Jake Livermore-style performances from last night on a, you know, kind of 3 out of 4 game basis rather than 1 in 6. You know, individually, I think we might be starting to get that with Jake. Hopefully, you know, we will see. That'd be great, but it needs to be somebody who can be a box to box midfield player. You know, with both strength and some power and some, you know, physique to be able to get up and support the front, the forward. Could it be a Daryl DK style forward? Daryl DK was the forward that Valerian Ismail had at both Barnsley and at West Brom, who can play with his back to goal and can also turn and power in behind as well. You know, so, you know, yet more competition, but somebody who offers you something different. That's fundamentally what we have to see. But as Casey said, you know, what you don't want to have is something that's going to come in and be disruptive. And especially in terms of personality, we've had enough of that already. Let's get some consistency, some steadiness, and some organic progressive growth. That's the most important thing in this particular team and that particular side. And, you know, obviously we've seen the comments about, you know, Dan Backman. And he's you know, removing the captaincy potentially from him, or at least examining that, because I don't think it's helping him very much. Kind of, you know, coming out that much, we may be looking at an alternative keeper at some stage in the near future. But you know, to have some really good proper backup for him, perhaps we'll see, and a left sided centre back maybe, who knows?
That'll be interesting. Yeah, it's yeah. Hull have definitely made the most out of their recruitment this year, haven't they? Mm. They've brought in some top four players, and it's, yeah, I know Watford are miles off from spending £5 million on a player like Philogene, but yeah, Hull are very lucky, especially bringing in Scott Twine as well on loan from Burnley, who can hit a dead ball, can't he? It can find the back of a net, but let's just we'll wrap it up in a second. Let's just get our score predictions quickly for our game at Hull this weekend. I'll come to you first, Katie. I know you're traveling up there as well, aren't you? So it's back-to-back away games for you as well. Are you traveling up with your dad?
No, I'm dragging my boyfriend there.
Ah, oh, the Leicester fan.
Yeah. yeah, because I don't want to go by myself. And
Hull, well done.
fair play. He dragged you along to, was it Blackburn away for Leicester earlier in the season?
No, I went to Swansea with him, and then we got stranded there because all the trains were cancelled and we had to stay the night like in Swansea. So he owes me a Watford away game.
There's definitely better places to stay in the UK than Swansea, but yeah, I'm sure you've had a good night. But yeah, score prediction for Hull on Saturday.
I feel like if I say we're going to win, we'll lose.
Do reverse psychology then.
I think we could like draw like 1-1, or maybe we might win 1-0. But I don't know. It's going to be tough, but I feel like we've got confidence going in. But so have they, didn't they win like 4-1?
John Parslow says, "Don't get stuck in Hull, Casey." I've actually done a weekend in Hull as well. Yeah, the nightlife's not too bad, to be fair. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend staying overnight there. Pete, what about you? What's your score prediction?
A weekend in Hull, my lord. That sounds like a horror show, right, Dan? I think I'm gonna look back at that last block of games after the international break where we kind of drew 3-1-3. I think if we can come away with anything from Hull this weekend, I think it's got to be seen as a very big positive. So I'm going to look at that, but I'm not looking at it as, oh, well, it's, you know, it, you know, we're not going to win. Hull has been for us traditionally a pretty difficult place to go and bring back 3 points. So I'm going to be hopeful. I'm going to go for a Desmond. I'm going to go for a 2-2.
So you didn't go for 1-1. You can do a 1-1 on this podcast.
No need for that. Not when there's a Desmond as an option open to me.
We do love a Desmond. Mike says 1-1. Sorry, Pete. I know that's prediction is taken. I'll be dragging Beck to a New York bar to watch it. She doesn't know it yet, though. He says KMB with sell. I'm going to probably go for, you know what? I will take a point away from Hull. They're on form. Are they in the top six as well? They got a good victory over Rotherham last night as well, so I would definitely take a point. So you know what, I'm gonna steal that 1-1 as well. I don't think Watford score many away from home, so who's gonna score though? You know what, I'm gonna probably go for Yasser Espria again. Man on form with his dancing feet. I don't think he'll take it past the keeper this time. Maybe he's gonna chip the keeper. I'm going for a chip. Yeah, he's gonna chip the keeper, and then yeah, he's gonna, yeah, just dance around him. But yeah, Thank you, Pete, so much for joining us.
It's a very, very precise prediction, that. Not only the score, but how he's going to score it. I like that very much.
Yeah, and celebration. Tell you what, if this guy comes off, I need to do the lottery or something, because, yeah, see the future. But yeah, no, Pete, thank you so much for joining us tonight for me and Katie. We really appreciate it. We admire all of your work that you do. Do not scratch your eyes, and with Justin and Carl, and we'll be tapping them up next to come on the Voice of the Vic as well. But yeah, really enjoyed your insightfulness tonight, and yeah, we'd love to get you back on at some point.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm sure the lads would love to kind of spread our normal gospel of chaos and stupidity again. More of the same.
Yeah, definitely. And we might have to put out some swearing warnings for Carl as well, because we know what Carl's like. And Justin will be all right. I don't think he swears too much, does he? So yeah, just Carl, we just need to look out for it. But yeah, no, thank you everyone for watching tonight. Thank you for getting involved in the comments section as well. If you like the video, hit that like button and also hit that subscribe button as well. Mike wants to get us the fifth 500 still before Christmas. It's not happening. We're only on 420, but that was his aim at the start of the season. So we've gone up a little bit, but we might get there one day. But yeah, we will be back Sunday evening to do we'll do a review of the Hull City game this weekend. So Katie, safe journeys up there, and everyone else that's traveling up to Hull this weekend, and come on you Orns.
Sports Social Podcast Network.